The Guardian.
Hello, this is Andy Zaltzman's Summer of Sports, issue 4, the Everything Apart from Football sports podcast. So basically, there is no news and no football in it, which makes this the one thing remaining that can reunite Britain. An oasis of soothing bullshit in a whirling ocean of cantankerous cockery. Can you have an oasis in an ocean? Not anymore, thank you Brussels, but the point stands. And we've seen, just today, we're recording this on Thursday, we've seen the healing power of sport. Boris Johnson, the man who put the into opportunist, played one game of cricket at the weekend and it has made him see the light. He has withdrawn his bold bid to become king. There is no football on the show, we leave that to the Guardian footballistas. But we can talk about England getting knocked out of the Euros, because they didn't play anything that was discernibly recognisable as football. We don't want to do that though, because there's too much other sport. I'm joined this week by comedian Nish Kumar and editor of the Guardian Guide and refugee from the Football Weekly podcast, Paul McInnes. But first, the sport! The USA is still the world's one true global superpower in ultimate frisbee. America might be only a few short months away from taking a major step towards voting itself out of existence. All the rage these days, I'm told. But they sure as hell showed the universe who is boss in disc sports, winning all six titles at the 2016 World Ultimate and Guts Championships here in London, in front of a crowd of 10,000, would you believe? Guts, in case you're wondering, which I assume you were, is like dodgeball but with a frisbee, basic training for working in a busy restaurant. Ultimate and Guts, also coincidentally, the most dangerous road junction in the USA. In hockey, the Champions Trophies have concluded here in London in the men's final. Australia beat India 0-0 after a controversial penalty shootout. Who knew you could have one of those in a hockey match? Then Argentina beat the Netherlands 2-1 in the women's tournament. Awesome time for the Southern Hemisphere in hockey. Well, you can have that Southern Hemisphere. We still beat you in things like most renaissances started and the highest ratio of land to sea. And in cricket, England are continuing their trend of having an absolutely stinking World Cup and then becoming world beaters. England 3-0 winners against Australia in rugby and hammering Sri Lanka in one-day cricket, albeit against a Sri Lankan team that frankly couldn't bowl their way out of a paper bag.
Tennis!
Let's move on now to Wimbledon and introduce our guests. So we have Nish Kumar, comedian extraordinaire.
Hello, Andrew. Hello. How are you?
And Paul McInnes, from The Guardian.
Yes, exactly. Nothing extraordinary about me.
It's let's lay this on the table. It's been... We recorded the last episode of this on Thursday, on polling day. It's been a week since then, and you know, a week with four capital letters. I mean, how's it treated you, Paul?
Terribly. I mean, absolutely terribly. It's affected my physical health. It's affected my mental health. But I have had this element where it's been utterly compelling. It is like watching four seasons of 24 in an hour and a half in between, you know, the end of Country File and Songs of Praise. It is just, there's been so much drama going on. I really don't like the way that journalists turn politics into a sort of a form of entertainment, but it's been impossible not to see it in that way sometimes.
Well, politicians have turned politics into a form of entertainment this week. Like, they've gone out of their way. And it's interesting that you said about physical effects, because when I turned on the news at 6 a.m. on Friday and saw the result, I immediately had violent diarrhea. And I don't know what that means, but I think my bowels really had their finger on the pulse that month. And I had sort of 2 days of what could only be described as Brexit. It was... And I feel like, you know, your guts are a sensitive organ.
Thanks for raising the tone of the show. Personally, yep. On Friday, I left here, went up to Birmingham, and on Friday I made my debut in Test Match Special as the stats man.
Oh, wow.
And which was basically a lifelong dream. So on the same day, I had, you know, the future for, you know, the country I live in, the country that my children are growing up in, basically irrevocably altered, whilst at the same time amidst this sort of fog of political depression, immersing myself in the joyously irrelevant world of sporting
that's
stats.
That's a great graph, that is. Andy Zaltzman's personal kind of ambitions and achievements going this way. nations going completely and forming a massive X.
So I think it showed the healing power of sport.
It's the only thing you have in common with Nigel Farage.
Yeah, that's too much, actually. That's too many things. I'm not at all comfortable with that. So let's get on to Wimbledon. It is that time of year again. Wimbledon, the changeless bastion of everlasting greenness, the white-clothed pillar of British summertime, the abattoir of dreams where strawberries go to die. And it's been, I don't know, I mean, it has been slightly overshadowed by political events.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Heather Watson, about the exact time that Boris Johnson announced he was pulling out of the Tory leadership race, lost a gripping 3-set of 12-10.
Well, that's another thing we can blame Boris for.
Yeah.
I've got absolutely no qualms in blaming Boris Johnson for her exit.
I think poor Heather just simply couldn't concentrate on the tennis. There must have been people sitting around just muttering, oh, Boris has pulled out. How do you concentrate on tennis when that is happening?
I think Boris pulling out is an exclusive the Mail on Sunday have had it stashed on file for about 15 years.
Really? Bit blue. Family show. Now, Nish, one of the highlights so far, Marcus Willis.
Yes.
World ranked 772, which I believe is also coincidentally my ranking in the British comedy rankings at the moment.
Oh, man, you're three above me, Zoltan. I'm furious.
Won his first round match against the world number 53 and got to play Federer in the second round. Didn't entirely win against Federer.
He didn't win in any sense, I think.
I mean, he won in the, probably having the most fun of his career sense.
It was universally heartwarming. Yeah. It was absolutely incredible watching him out there. There was nothing bad about that. I mean, it would have been great if he'd won, but what we were left with was a guy having the absolute best day of his life and also the spectacle of Roger Federer playing tennis. And if this is the end, which it may be, we can all go to our graves happy that we got to see Roger Federer play tennis. It really is something else.
It is. I mean, I think it's arguably the greatest aesthetic thing in the history of sport.
Yes.
Is there an argument, and I'll broaden it out to you as well, Paul, for solving all the world's crises? So like going to the Middle East and just projecting onto the sky, not a bat sign, but just like a gif of Federer hitting that backhand up the line against Nadal in 2008 in the Wimbledon final.
There is something that just does speak across nation, across tongue, that is that grace. It's what he embodies, is grace. And I think we all want a bit of that in our tumultuous lives, current conditions aside, even when all we had to worry about was could we get home in time for EastEnders and cook a meal beforehand. Just to have that calm is what he exudes all the time. And I completely back on that.
He has EastEnders on series link, so I don't need to worry about that.
No worries about that. What I did notice,
so much time.
I did notice about him, he there was a slight post-Brexit tone to his post-match comments when he was very, very keen to kind of say what a great experience it was, but he couldn't quite summon up any enthusiasm for saying that the guy had actually played a half-decent game of tennis. I think as far as he got was saying, the crowd were quite behind him.
Yeah.
The only people I feel sorry for are the makers of the film Wimbledon, because the whole time that was going on, the commentators were referring to this guy, this sort of plucky British underdog who'd had an unlikely run through the competition, as a Rocky-like moment. And I just thought, that is the exact plot of the film Wimbledon. And no one was even referencing it. They were just going, it's a bit Rocky-esque.
Well, I mean, are you a fan of the film Wimbledon?
I'm breathing, aren't I, Andy?
Right. Because I have some major, major issues with that film. Huge issues. So, you have a British player in the Wimbledon semi-final, and I believe he was playing on number two court. What was on centre court and number one court that he was relegated to one of the outside courts? A British player in a Wimbledon semi-final. What was it? The Queen wrestling a bear? I mean, that's the only possible explanation.
Do these guys not know how important a suspension of disbelief is in enjoying art?
I mean, it's an absolute disgrace.
That's how bad that movie is that even when a real Wimbledon-like moment is happening, people have forgotten about that film to the extent that they just had to say, that's a bit like Rocky with tennis, isn't it?
I mean, to me, filming that scene on an outside court, that was like filming the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan in a sandpit. It's completely inappropriate. Foul joke on a miss. Andy Zaltzman 1, Sport 4. Now, although Federer may well be the most beautiful tennis player in history, is he the best? Has Djokovic overtaken them. It's very hard to compare players, you know, across the history of tennis. But, you know, Federer at his peak, Djokovic at his peak. Who wins that?
It's hard to compare and contrast because it's like comparing a beautiful painting with a man smashing you repeatedly in the face. It's hard to compare. What is more effective?
Right, one so it's Muhammad Ali versus Michelangelo.
Yeah.
Well, I'd pay to see that.
Although I do think that a piece of video in which somebody is punched repeatedly in the face was submitted to the Turner Prize in 2009 as a piece of conceptual art. So you might find it a little more easy to make.
Well, there you go. Djokovic is more conceptual art, whereas Federer is sort of classical beauty that would have been appreciated across the ages.
So it's Rodin versus Tracy Emin we're talking about here.
It's Rodin versus that Chris Ofili painting that was made with elephant shit.
Can anyone stop Djokovic this year? I mean, I would say, can you teach a puppy to juggle? By which I mean, maybe, but it's not going to be easy.
I would say the only thing that can stop Djokovic is if, you know, if the Incredible Hulk decides to take up playing tennis. That's the only way. He is...
Do you not think he'd pick Hulk apart from the back of the court?
Just think, yeah, you're right, actually.
I mean, just raw brute strength. I mean, he might bang down a few aces, but... I mean, Djokovic is just such a complete tennis player. I mean,
he's an absolute phenomenon.
Tactical mastery, one of the hardest match players there's ever been. I can't see Hulk.
It reminds me of that scene in The Terminator where the guy is saying to Sarah Connor, he cannot be stopped, he cannot be reasoned with, and he will not stop. He is an absolute... It's like he's been sent from the future to protect us all with his tennis-playing ability.
Right.
I mean, surely at some point his motivation has to drop or his concentration has to drop at some point.
Yes, you'd hope so. But, I mean, he doesn't appear to be a natural slacker to see. One club he hasn't got... I mean, with the Hulk as well, I mean, how's he going to deal with a... You know, Wimbledon's predominantly white clothing rule. I mean,
that's
a Hulk
very difficult.
In a, like a white T-shirt.
Well, it'll be like Agassi, won't it? We all thought, will he turn up in a coloured T-shirt? Yeah. And then he took it off and the Hulk will reveal that he's been wearing white RF pants. Interesting that he's gone for Roger Federer, not for his own personal branded shorts.
I mean, that's one of the weird things about Djokovic, this absolute elite sportswoman, one of the most technically perfect, impregnable sports players there's ever been, sponsored by Uniqlo. That doesn't sit right with me. You know, decent... mid-quality clothing brand and the absolute pinnacle of professional sport.
Yeah, it's like finding out Primark sponsored Muhammad Ali.
And the big question with Djokovic is, can he do it on a wet Wednesday evening in Stoke?
They pull the roof
fan.
Over, I think, for that, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think that he will ever, whatever the challenge, whatever the fee, deign to play in a midweek in Stoke. Yeah. I wouldn't imagine.
Sad.
The Stoke Open. That would be quite, you know, at last Stoke. This is maybe one of the opportunities of leaving. We get to negotiate not just trade deals, but interjection into international sporting schedules. It's like, yes, if you want us to keep on hosting Wimbledon, and you do because you love the sentimentality and the romance, we also want to have Stoke on the ATP tour. and we want to have, I don't know, three golfing opens live from the Yorkshire Dales.
Yeah.
Just to kind of open up a little bit of variety.
Bit of variety, bit of British weather.
Well, unless the EU goes very harsh with us and says we can no longer participate in the French Open and we have to host our own equivalent of the Stoke Open, where Andy Murray just plays Alex Bogdanovich on an endless loop.
I'd watch that. I like that. I've got no problem with the Bog.
I've got no problem with the Bog either.
Andy Zaltzman, Summer of Sport.
Massive, massive sporting events this weekend in Sonkajärvi in Finland. I hope I pronounced that right, but I almost certainly haven't. It is the Wife Carrying World Championships, at the 20th edition, I believe, no less. What a sport this is. Have either of you ever carried a wife, physically carried a wife?
I mean, I've done it emotionally, obviously. I've been there for very difficult times.
Right. Are you married?
I was.
You were,
I got divorced.
Right.
Dropped her.
I failed at the wife carrying.
Right. Absolutely.
Even emotionally.
Her. Old Butterfingers McInnes.
I was a yard away from the line.
I mean, top level sport does create a lot of pressure on relationships, particularly, I imagine, in wife carrying, if things go badly wrong. Because there is, on every course, there's, the official World Championship course, 253.5 metres long, It has two obstacles and one water obstacle. Nish, you're not married, but you do have a girlfriend, don't you?
Yes, correct.
And I mean, have you broached the subject of wife carrying at any point?
For me, it's one of the key reasons to get married, Andy.
Right.
At this point, it's basically tax incentives and the opportunities to enter the wife carrying world championships in Finland.
Right. I mean, you don't actually have to marry her to do it. It's the rules.
Can
of the
I take someone else's wife?
You can. Yeah. You can take your neighbour's wife, according to the official rules of the championship. The rules of wife carrying, which I have here, say the wife carried can be yours or the neighbour's one. She must, however, be over 17 years old.
Highly reasonable.
Yeah. I imagine she's got to be over 17 for a number of reasons, mostly legal.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise it's not so much wife carrying as
child abducting.
Yeah, I mean, it's legal.
Beyond the sort of the progressive point that one might make, you know, what about gay marriages? What about those who are in a gender fluid relationship?
Right.
There is something quite interesting about the wife carrying championships, which is very European, I think, and something we will miss as we move out of the continent, which is that, according to the organisers, there is a direct erotic component to wife carrying.
That is a niche fetish, isn't it?
It is a niche fetish, right. But it doesn't make it any. I mean, fetishes, you know, tend towards the niche, as far as I understand.
But fetishes tend towards the niche is actually the title of my forthcoming book.
After your show, all the fetishes just tend towards you. But there is only one piece of equipment that you're allowed to use, and that's a belt. And the wife has to hang on the belt. She can hang whichever way she wants, as long as she doesn't touch the.
Sure.
But this becomes a sort of a focus for a sort of a physical coming together.
Oh right.
That is about kind of getting to know your partner physically, emotionally, erotically.
Wow.
To a great extent. And I think that's quite lovely.
It's a tough game for a bigamist, though.
Yeah, but Mormons don't really get to
enter. Yeah, exactly. Because you're either facing a difficult decision or one of the longest days of your life carrying three people around a course.
Having your spine broken within 10 metres of the race beginning.
Yeah.
Well, Cecil, though, I mean, there are four different techniques employed to carry the wife. There's the traditional piggyback, the sack of potatoes, which is the wife over one shoulder, the fireman's carry, which is the wife over both shoulders. And the most popular technique of recent times is the Estonian, which is the wife dangling upside down with one leg either side of the man's neck, basically. So he holds the legs and she dangles over his back.
Can you imagine? I mean, I presume it's named after the Estonian who brought this new tactic to a wife carrying championships.
Well, I mean, it does raise a lot of questions about what Estonians do in marriage.
It's no one going for the Kevin Costner.
Oh, well.
Like, in The Bodyguard. It's no one going... I imagine if you introduced that, you'd be the wife-carrying equivalent of the Fosby flop. You introduced the Costner carry. You've just got to lift from the knees.
I mean, all sports are looking for those marginal gains, aren't they? I'm sure there's teams of backroom scientists who've put all these things to the test. Maybe the Costner just doesn't work. It doesn't work in Finland. We don't know. Just getting some breaking political news. Not only Boris Johnson pulled out of the running for the Tory leadership. He's announced he is running for the leadership of the Liberal Democrats on a joint ticket with Jeremy Corbyn. And Tony Blair has just declared war on himself.
That is too close to the truth, Andy.
Well, of course, one of the all-time greats of wife carrying is Teisto Miettinen, the Finnish athletes. Not only has he won world champion gold medals for water running, bog snorkeling and kick sled, but five-time winner of the World Wife Carrying Championships. I mean, he's like Bjorn Borg at Wimbledon in the late 1970s. How'd you beat Teisto Miettinen?
I have a question. What is water running? Because it sounds like someone's put the word swimming through a bad translation engine. Either that or it's the only sport, presumably the only winners of that sport are him and Jesus Christ.
Allegedly.
Oh, you would say that, wouldn't you, Andy?
Well, it's never proven.
No picks, didn't happen.
But the interesting... I'm fascinated by the length of the track, 253.5 metres. That seems like an odd distance, and I was doing a bit of research into the reason for that. It's like the Olympic marathon. In fact, it dates back to the 1908 London Olympic Marathon, which is where they got the 26 miles and the extra 385 yards. The 26 miles, of course, the distance from Marathon to Athens in ancient Greece, which the runner Pheidippides ran. Can't remember. I think he was raising money to fund a roof on the Parthenon. didn't quite get enough by the looks of it. And the extra 385 yards, various theories. Some say to do with the royal family wanting to watch the start or the end, but we do know that the 253.5-metre distance of the wife-carrying race comes from the 1908 London Marathon, when the then Prince of Wales, George, later King George V, and his wife, the princess, nipped out for a beer and a hot dog just before the leading runners entered the stadium. She twisted her ankle over-enthusiastically squirting some ketchup on her foot-long dog, and George had to carry her the 277.2 yards back to their seat so they didn't miss the end of the race. Of course, that's 253.5 metres. He slung the princess over his shoulders, cradling the hot dogs under his chin while she balanced their pints, and they had to negotiate. Two obstacles on the way, a cart full of orphans and a sleeping triceratops, still flourishing in the UK at that point, of course. And the Olympic fish pond, because fish feeding was one of the many Olympic sports now sadly fallen by the wayside in the Olympic programme. And they celebrated getting back in time by buying a round for everyone in the royal box. And that is, in fact, the prize for winning the World Wife Carrying Champion. You win your wife's weight in beer. It all dates. I mean, I might have made some of that up, but you know, it's basically...
I think the rumour is that Colin Firth and Helena Bonham Carter will be reprising those roles on the big screen come summer 2017.
Oh, yeah. What a sequel. The King's Carry.
I think we probably should move on at that point.
Repeat after me. I do solemnly swear by almighty sport to watch the sport, the whole sport, and nothing but the sport. So help me, sport.
We can cross now to Jacob Steinberg live at Wimbledon. Jacob, Wimbledon, how would you assess it so far? We're recording on the Thursday. It's been pretty damp, but some good British stories.
Yeah, well, it's been pretty rainy so far, which I guess is another great British story. But we've had Peter Coltish's story of Marcus Willis getting through to the first round and then out of nowhere, and then through to the second round to play Roger Federer, which was obviously amazing. No one saw that coming. I don't think anyone really knew who he was until Friday when the email came through about this guy who was 775th in the world rankings getting through to the main draw for the first time ever.
Apparently his parents didn't even know he played tennis.
Nick Kyrgios didn't know he played tennis. He was he said the other day that I didn't realise he was still playing. I think he was pretty close to giving it up. So, amazing story. And to play Roger Federer, it was something he's never going to forget. We were taking bets yesterday on how many games he was going to win, and Sean Ingle was suggesting it was going to be 3 triple bagels, and I was veering towards that as well. And it looked like it was going to be like that after the first set, which he lost 6-love. But as he said, he'll always be able to take to his grave that he managed to lob Roger Federer, and he did win a few games in the end. So, it was a great experience.
And Federer's playing another Brit in the third round, playing Dan Evans.
Yeah, Dan Evans just got through. He's sort of the wild card of British. He's always been a bit combustible, and he's a massive talent, but it's only really kind of come together for him in the last 2 years. He got to the fourth round of the US Open in 2013. Didn't get any further, but yeah, he didn't play too much of a part in the Davis Cup win, which obviously was very much to do with the Murray brothers, but he's got the talent and the flamboyance to actually make a big impression, and beating someone like Dolgopolov is a big achievement because he's around 30, 31 in the world. I don't give him much of a chance against Federer, but again, it will be an interesting match.
That's two one-handed backhands, the Evans-Federer match. I mean, that makes me excited as a tennis fan. There's not enough one-handers in the world. We've had Federer, obviously Wawrinka, Gasquet, Dimitrov's faded. But I mean, what is the future of the one-handed backhand? Will there be any in 20 years' time?
I hope so. So many of them do play the two-hander, and obviously Murray and Djokovic are big opponents of it. But there is something just more dismissive about the one-handed backhand. It's more like a cuff. It's like a slap around the face when Federer does it. You know, be gone, get out of my way. I'm winning this point now, and it does feel a bit more regal, just like he's telling someone that you don't even deserve to be on the same court as him. So yeah, I hope it stays around, Andy. Hopefully it's a technique that's not going to get lost.
Hello, Jacob. Nish Kumar here. What level of act of God is it going to take to stop Novak Djokovic from winning Wimbledon? Is it a flood or are we going to need a full-on plague of locusts?
Well, the forecast is terrible, so maybe he'll just never get to play the final. I mean, yesterday he broke Rod Laver's record of 30 consecutive Grand Slam wins, and he said afterwards, I was being very modest, I'll see where it takes me, and kind of thinking, well, it's going to take you all the way to the final, and then maybe it could be, maybe Andy Murray could beat him. On grass, maybe it's more sort of 50-50, 60-40 in Djokovic's favour. Obviously, Murray beat him 3 years ago. He's going to play Federer in the semi-finals, so perhaps we can just think that Federer is going to take him to five sets and knacker him out, but I can't see it happening. I think the final will be Murray v Djokovic, and I think it will be what happened in Paris and in Melbourne this year.
Now, this morning, dramatic political news with Boris Johnson pulling out. Has that made a big impact at Wimbledon, or are people basically treating it as a kind of refuge from reality?
Wimbledon is a bit of a refuge from reality. It's like its own little universe. It's green universe. I'm sort of walking around the courts today because I'm not on a shift, I'm not working, so I've just been watching Raonic v Seppi, and no one on that court, as they watched Milos Raonic with ace after ace past Andreas Seppi, seemed to be too concerned about Boris Johnson. There didn't seem to be too many people thinking that. They were more thinking about the Canadians' serving technique, to be honest, which was very, very impressive and very fast.
Jacob, thank you very much for joining us. Enjoy the tennis stroke rain stroke strawberries. How have the strawberries reacted? Are sales of strawberries down as people worry about the economic future of the nation?
Well, they're very, very expensive. Someone in front of us on court three was sitting there with a little box of strawberries. I think they cost around £3.
Right.
So I don't know, and you don't get too many for that £3. So I don't know.
Is Brexit going to mean that we can set our own strawberries prices now instead of having them imposed on us from Brussels?
Yeah, hopefully it'll be £1 next year. Yeah. I mean, that's hopefully what they were going for with the whole EU referendum. I think that was one of the key points of the Leave campaign. Actually, lower prices for strawberries at Wimbledon. Yeah.
But it only comes out after the vote. That's the tragedy, isn't it? Don't really know what we were voting for. Jacob, thank you very much.
Andy Zaltzman, Summer of Sport.
More political news just breaking. Jeremy Corbyn has called for himself to step down and has told himself to mind his own business. Interesting developments almost every minute at the moment. Let's move on to the Olympics. Gents, are you excited about Rio 2016 from either a sporting or medical point of view?
Yeah. I'm not going to make a joke about encephalitis, but I kind of...
You wouldn't believe the number of comedians I've heard say that.
But I've in a totally bland, middle-of-the-road way, I'm lucky enough to have been to Rio. It's a wonderful city. And when I went, they were preparing for the Olympics, and I was very, very excited about the prospect. Now, not so much. But I would hope that, well, if nothing else, it will be great television pictures because it is one of the most scenic places in the entire world.
There's been an incredible story this week where the people landed at Rio Airport, some of the first groups of athletes have landed, and at the airport waiting for them were off-duty police officers bearing signs saying, "Welcome to hell," and "Whoever comes to Rio will not be safe." What a welcome.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, what a welcome.
Has that gone through Google Translation software as well?
It was "God Save the Queen" originally.
And "Welcome to Hull."
The country's in absolute turmoil.
Yeah.
And, they impeached their president. They're in the worst recession in 25 years. And I think that this is all a tactic to put off foreign athletes. This is a play on behalf of the Brazilian Olympic team to scare everyone else. And we, to be honest, in 2012, we've missed a trick. We should have held this EU referendum then, caused absolute economic chaos and put everyone else off. We've blown it.
Yes. We tried to cause economic chaos by spending £10 million on a sports day. £10 billion, sorry. I don't know. If Danny Boyle was programming the London opening ceremony now in the wake of Brexit. I mean, he would have to do it differently.
No, we'd have to sack Danny Boyle and get Ken Loach in. Either that or Danny Boyle would have to draw on his experience of making 28 Days Later.
Yes, exactly. Or Nick Love, the guy who makes all the Danny Dyer films. It would just be loads of people with homemade shivs walking around pissing on the Union Jack. I mean,
I had some issues with that as well, similar to my issues with Wimbledon, the film. There was the cricket playing scene.
Yes.
Set in late 18th century, early cricket, in which there was a visible descent towards the umpire. Which seems... I don't know how much of that there was in the late 18th century. It seemed...
It's very T20, that, isn't it?
Yeah. Wasn't happy with that at all.
It's huge. W.G. Gross was the first sledger.
He was a notorious cheat. about the first time I met Geoffrey Boycott, I was travelling around the 2011 Cricket World Cup and I had this little knitted woolen doll of W.G. Gross, as one does.
I remember it well.
Made by my sister, the undisputed queen of podcasting. But she's also very, very good with knitting needles, and she'd made me this knitted W.G. Grace. And I was trying to get pictures with famous cricketers with this W.G. Grace, and I asked Geoffrey if he'd have a picture taken with him, and he said, "You must be kidding me," with a couple of other words in it. anyway, to try and light the mood, I said, you've got more first-class hundreds than him. And Boycott replied, "I know I did. I know exactly how many more I got than him, and I did not cheat as much as he did." So that was a man.
In what particular
up.
Ways was he renowned for cheating?
Well,
stashing balls in his beard and kind of putting them out. That went wide.
I think he probably did do that at some point. But there was a famous game when he picked the bales up, put them back on, and informed everyone that the crowd had come to watch him bat, not to watch the bowler bowl. Which would be frowned upon, I guess. Now I don't know what the ICC would probably fine him 15% of his match fee. This Olympic story interested me. Scott Brash, who was part of Team GB's Olympic gold medal-winning show jumping team in London, is missing the Rio Games because both of his two horses are injured. I mean, that seems a bit unfair on Scott himself.
Can I just say, first of all, tremendous name.
Scott Brash.
Scott Brash.
I mean, how is he not American? That seems wrong, doesn't it?
If he's not going to be competing in the Olympics, he should seriously consider a move to WWE wrestling. Scott Brash is an absolutely extraordinary... It's very rare that the rider's name is more spectacular than the horse's name.
Well, that... I mean, it seems unfair on Scott. It's a bit like banning a Russian athlete because their chemist is on maternity leave.
Zing!
Former hockey international Lawrence Doherty has criticised the Team GB squads for the Rio Olympics because zero Scottish hockey players have been chosen for this. I mean, this is the last thing this country needed after the divisions of the referendum. First, the referendum on the future of the entire nation, the continent and its people, and now a controversial hockey team selection. Where do we go?
I know, it's just like a blow to the nuts. But on the other hand, you know, you can imagine that the Scottish hockey team will now be negotiating their own terms.
Yeah.
And maybe be able to kind of enter at the quarterfinal stage, which, I mean, yeah. Would be...
This is the backlash, way. Scotland.
Yeah.
If you agitate to leave the UK, we will not pick your players for a hockey team. Think on, Scottish people. Do you want to be part of the union and play hockey? Or do you want to go shove it?
Your proud hockey heritage shall come to naught.
Exactly.
If you continue to play fast and loose.
You'll be stuck with curling.
Michael Phelps, the prominent swimmer, has qualified.
Prominent water runner.
Yeah, that's a very basic way of describing it, isn't it? Yeah, water runner, outstanding water runner. Has qualified for his fifth Olympics. He competed as a 15-year-old in Sydney in 2000 and has hauled in goals in Athens, Beijing and London. And he's qualified, again, he's had a few personal ups and downs. But if there was a man you wanted to get you from A to B as quickly as possible, provided that A and B were in exactly the same place and you wanted him to go from A to B via C, a point 50 metres away in a straight line with a body of non-tidal chlorinated water in between, whilst wearing nothing but a pair of pants. He is the man. He would be the man you would go for.
Absolutely.
Surely.
You're not going to get any argument
from me. Point A to
point A.
Yeah. He has so much gold. I was reading this. He has so much gold in his personal collection now from all his Olympics and World Championships that if he launched himself and all his possessions into space
on a solo mission to Neptune, the global economy would shrink by 3.4%.
Yeah. That's the last thing we need. Yeah.
I think he's
Keep Phelps on Earth.
If there's a message from this show, this difficult time, let it be that.
Yes. If you're living, if you happen to live in the Phelps household, please attach weight to him using the one approved belt.
By that same token, if Phelps is interested in buying England, now is probably a pretty good time.
Get it dirt cheap.
He's getting it skits.
That's probably 1.5 goals, if that.
England has essentially got a red sticker on it now, like a dented tin.
Marked down.
Well, that concludes this week's Summer of Sports podcast. We'll be back next week, assuming that, Britain hasn't just floated off into space in disgust stroke glory with itself. Who knows? Nish Kumar, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me, Andy.
For coming in. How's the rest of your sporting summer panning out? What are the highlights you're looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to the second week of Wimbledon. Looking forward to seeing if the Locusts defeat Djokovic. And looking forward to a England-free European football competition.
That sounds racist. Paul, for you, what's...
guess who's got a ticket for the big Iceland-France game on Sunday?
Bjork?
This guy. Yeah, no, it was bought a long time ago, and there's been this great sort of map with me and my friends getting excited about the prospect, scared at the prospect, beleaguered at the prospect, and now just we're going to go and celebrate with the Icelanders.
The interesting origin of that chant.
No, I don't know.
It comes from when there was a problem with Icelandic national television.
Uh-oh.
And in fact, during Wimbledon a couple of years ago, it was the and everything was in slow motion, including the sound. And they showed Azarenka versus Sharapova, and that's the recreation of the slowed down grunts from both players.
It's amazing.
That's a fact.
Oh, it's amazing. I wouldn't have believed that unless you told me.
Right, I think we all need to go and sit down and think about what we've just done. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. May the sport be with you.